Hello and welcome to the Global Energy Transition Podcast, presented by the Heinrich Böll Stiftung European Union and the Global Energy Transition Blog. I am your host, Michael Buxbaum, photojournalist and lead blogger for theenergytransition.org. The international response to Russia's brutal February 2022 invasion of Ukraine has altered and transformed the energy transition, in some ways accelerating the move towards wind and solar generation, but also forcing countries dependent on Russian fossil fuels, particularly European nations and the European Union as a whole, to search for and secure alternative supplies. As our team of bloggers at the Energy Transition are broadly covering, the sudden shocks of this new reality largely exacerbated the already growing triple crisis of climate, energy, and inflation that we continue to face. For decades, renewable energy proponents have advocated for the transformation of aging or abandoned coal mines and coal-fired power plants into green energy centers. After 200-plus years of industrialization, the reality is there are so many places worldwide where industry has moved on, leaving blighted brownfields in their wake. Once a source of greenhouse gases, many old mines and abandoned ones remain wired to the energy grid. Being granted a grid connection is increasingly becoming a challenge for new solar farms and green energy centers. Additionally, local opposition to building new power lines can be both costly and controversial. In that sense, closed mines and power plants are already tied to the grid, and converting them rarely faces a challenge. What's more, these old industrial sites often still have substations, which help convert electricity to a supply that's suitable for use in homes and businesses. After years of covering the international coal scene through about 2015 for a variety of industry publications, and in the process traveling to hundreds of coal mines and power plants and import and export facilities worldwide and spending far too much time underground, the coal conversion narrative is something that I have long been following. Colorado's Rocky Mountain Institute, which had for decades advocated for such transformations, started tracking projects globally through their Sunshine for Mines initiative, publishing their first findings in 2015. In their first report, they listed the handful of such carbon reduction developments on mine sites worldwide, which, at the time, had only come to about 600 megawatts of cumulative capacity. I also first wrote about several lighthouse developments and the potential for more in 2015 in a pair of articles for both Mining Magazine and later Power Magazine, following a trip I made to the pioneering Glen Rock Wind Farm in the American state of Wyoming, the first wind farm to be constructed on reclaimed mine land. Located on the former Dave Johnston surface mine near Casper, Wyoming, walking along its rolling green high prairie land, you would never know that over the course of 42 years, over 104 million tons of coal have been extracted right there and burned nearby to produce electricity. After going into operation in 2008, Glen Rock has grown to be a much larger wind farm, now capable of producing almost 250 megawatts of clean power. A couple of years after the Glen Rock facility was coming together, on the other side of the world in Germany, a consortium of German and Chinese developers had proudly completed construction of a 11.6 megawatt solar farm on a former strip mine in central Germany. At the time, it was a pretty large coal-to-solar conversion. Now, a decade later, developers not too far away from that first site are getting closer to completing a 650 megawatt coal-to-solar conversion, which may become the largest single solar farm in Germany when it starts producing in 2024. By 2019, RMI's list of coal conversions was just getting too long, as renewables on coal sites have begun generating almost 5 gigawatts worldwide. But now, a few years later, that's just a fraction of what's happening. Simply put, since 2008, coal production in the United States has more than halved, and outside of China and India, few other nations are still clinging to coal. And that downward trend, the International Energy Agency now says, is becoming unstoppable. While we might like to think that this decline is only happening out of concern over the climate, there's actually a lot more at play, particularly geology. The reality is that after 200 years or so of mining, the easiest coal to reach is long gone, and the best of the rest is being mined every day, and thus a bit more depleted. Now, for the most part, new studies show that what coal remains today is more expensive to mine, it's more expensive to transport, and thus more expensive to burn compared to the falling prices of new solar and wind generation. Combined with the rising costs of carbon credits in the EU or other regional regulations, for many countries and many electricity producers, there's simply less economic sense to stay with coal. However, what does make increasingly more economic sense is to reinvest in and repurpose abandoned, closed, or closing coal mines and power plants into renewable energy centers. And while energy developers had already been moving in this direction, Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine and the energy price shocks that followed have accelerated the coal to solar and renewables trend worldwide. Throughout the EU, converting coal mines and power plants into renewable energy sites became a key plank within the new Repower EU strategy adopted as a way to help speed the EU's move away from imported Russian gas and LNG. And the war has helped spur renewables development across the 27 member states. In 2022, for the first time, wind and solar reached over a fifth, 22%, of EU electricity generation. According to climate think tank Ember, the 41 gigawatts of new solar capacity that came online helped avoid some 10 billion euros in additional gas costs. And all that solar plus new wind coming online, coupled with a fall in electricity usage, prevented a much larger return to coal throughout the EU. Looking ahead, solar and wind adoption is now moving so fast that the IEA says renewables will surpass coal's share around the globe by 2025. In cooperation with the NGO Europe Beyond Coal, during the summer of 2022, I conducted a really long survey of coal to wind and solar projects that were ongoing or had already happened throughout Europe. This led me to another fresh report on this subject published by The Green Tank, an Athens, Greece-based environmental NGO, which looked through this subject through a just transitions lens. And so, for this episode of the Energy Transition Podcast, we're going to talk about this excitingly rapid uptake of new renewables and solar development on old or abandoned coal mining lands with one of the authors of the Green Tank's report, Nikos Montazaris. We'll link the Green Tank's report and several recent blogs I've written on coal to renewables into the show notes. These blogs, like all the material we publish, falls under a Creative Commons license and are therefore free for anyone to use, so long as you credit the material. Stay with us. Transitioning from coal to clean energy is a subject we've touched upon several times in our blogs and podcasts, such as in the Romanian Power Move series, where I covered how this Eastern European nation is planning to install solar arrays inside several state-owned lignite mines as part of its EU-funded energy transition. And more recently, we've written about how Colombia, South Africa, and other nations across the global south are also developing coal to solar and wind projects. But one nation where new solar is rapidly being developed in and around existing coal operations is Greece. To help us get perspective on this surprisingly happy story, I spoke to Nikos Montazaris, partner and senior analyst with the environmental NGO Green Tank, and one of the authors of their inspiring report, Just Transition in Practice: Sustainable Projects in Coal Regions. Now, it's fair to say that this report, which details about 50 or so projects, is a bit Greek heavy. But that makes sense when you realize how quickly developers are transforming the Greek region of Western Macedonia, the traditional lignite mining area of the country. Evidence of this? Last October, for several hours, the entire nation of Greece ran solely on renewables. And given how much new solar is coming online, the nation is now on track to reach its 2030 solar capacity target of 8 gigawatts by the end of this year, 2023, a full 7 years early. To open our conversation, I asked Nikos what prompted Green Tank to research and publish this study.
First of all, the motivation for this report was twofold. First, it's the fact that the development of the so-called territorial just transition plans, the prerequisites for getting funding for coal reduced transition, member states getting funding for a coal reduced transition, this is progressing very slowly and is very opaque, mostly at the national but also the EU level. And thus, there is the threat of dangerous investments sneaking in and materializing at the expense of other much-needed projects that would benefit citizens of coal regions more. At the same time, there is the additional threat of delaying the just transition process even further because of all this planning for a temporary, as they say, comeback of coal in several EU member states. The second part for our motivation was that now we have a new energy reality and new challenging goals as expressed by the REPowerEU plan. However, we don't have new funds. Thus, it is more urgent than ever to channel the funds of the just transition mechanism that the EU created for coal reduced transition mainly, but other regions as well. We need to channel these funds, the correct investments, in a fashion that is fully aligned with the REPowerEU plan. For these two reasons, and in an effort to contribute towards a truly sustainable territorial just transition plans, we researched the very rich just transition experience in the EU, especially as it was showcased in the coal reduced transition platform established in 2018. We've been following this very closely. This was later named Just Transition Platform. What we did is we separated the sustainable projects and best practices that were presented there from the non-sustainable ones, and we presented them in seven categories, sustainable, of course, version of those. The take-home message is that we have a lot of projects on the ground that are moving in the right direction, which shows that really just transition, which seems impossible, especially for citizens in coal regions, is very, very doable, very possible if we put our minds together. I mean, there are excellent examples around the EU which shows that the feasibility of just transition.
The Green Tank's report reviews several case studies throughout the EU, though Greece gets quite a bit of attention, and rightly so. In mid-2022, generation started at what at the time was the largest single PV plant in southeastern Europe, the 204-megawatt Kozani project located in western Macedonia. Built in large part by the Greek state-owned coal and electricity producer Public Power Company, or PPC, I asked Nikos to explain how Kozani has become something of a lighthouse project.
To me, the lighthouse aspect of this project, again, is not the technology. A is the scale. 2.5 gigawatts out of a total of 4 already installed in Greece is a huge percentage, a huge share. But the most important aspect of this is the turnaround, the very silent and quiet turnaround of one of the dirtiest companies in Europe, the Public Power Corporation. In 2019, PPC was addicted to coal, was losing money of it, was addicted to coal, no plans for PVs, no plans for wind, etc. And they are planning on installing a huge amount of capacity until 2024, mainly lignite regions, but not just in lignite regions. They want to invest there. They actually have signed three sustainability-linked bonds, a total amount of 1.275 billion euros, linked with very ambitious goals of cutting greenhouse gas emissions from thermal plants. So they really are trying to put their money where their mouth is. They want to invest in renewables. This turnaround was the most impressive aspect of this, and lignite regions in Greece are right at the center of PPC's change of its energy model.
I asked Nikos to put Greece's and Western Macedonia's lignite to renewables plan in context, describing why and how we got here.
Yes, Western Macedonia is a key energy region for Greece. It has been burning lignite since the 1950s, so we're talking about 7 decades of lignite use. It has reached a point in the late 90s and early 2000s where power from Western Macedonia covered approximately 70% of the electricity needs in Greece. And if you include the other lignite region in northern and southern Greece, then you would say that lignite had a share of 80% of electricity demand. Since the early 2010s, it became gradually apparent that the future of lignite in Greece was in jeopardy because it has very low quality and it's mostly influenced by any kind of change which has an economic effect. Because of the low quality of Greek lignite. And I'm talking about directives, the Industrial Emissions Directive and the Emissions Trading System Directive. These, essentially after the Paris Agreement, have really escalated.
With other PV projects under construction, in early 2023, Greece's PPC secured an additional 100 million euros plus in financing to support the construction of another 230 megawatts of PV, also to be constructed in Western Macedonia near the operating Kozani plant. Though this project will also be financed in part by the European Union's Next Generation EU funds under the Recovery and Resilience Facility Plan, Greece 2.0, PPC will also be developing this PV project in partnership with friend of the podcast and German energy behemoth, RWE, also known as Europe's most climate-damaging company. Given how much criticism I and others give RWE, perhaps it's only fair that we also recognize when they are transitioning better, so to say. I asked Nikos about why PPC would choose to work with RWE in this situation.
Yes, it's supposed to be close. We don't know exactly the site, by the way, but there are plans that RWE is going to collaborate with PPC to develop a 1 gigawatt PV panels, PV parks of a total capacity of 1 gigawatt. And I think this is a wonderful idea. Although in the last 3 years, PPC has taken huge strides towards becoming a financially sound company by moving away from Ignite, loss-making Ignite, and investing in renewables, it still does not have the capacity to do it all on its own. And it wants the help of bigger companies such as RWE. That is why RWE is co-developing with PPC this 1 gigawatt of solar in Western Macedonia, because PPC needs the help.
Back in Germany, of the various solar projects now being built on former mine land, one is a huge 650 megawatt facility, enough to power 200,000 average households. News reports show it's on track to begin generating by the end of 2023. I asked Nikos about the relationship between Kozani and these types of German projects.
Well, I would definitely highlight Kozani because it's truly, truly impressive. There are existing and much older projects around the EU. Germany is another very good example. But then, of course, Germany. For Germany, this is not that pioneering because it has been pioneering PVs since the 2010s. But Germany is largely responsible for having those low prices globally. So it's not a big surprise that Germany is installing large PVs in lignite mines. I consider this a given. Whereas in Greece, where we have around 4 gigawatts of PV capacity to install more than 2.5 gigawatts just in two mining sites, that's far more impressive.
Would you say that these are all projects that could become models for other areas too?
Yes, I would say that these are kind of lighthouse projects, in my opinion, and particularly suitable for lignite regions, not just in Greece, but other coal regions, lignite regions in particular, with open pit mines in Europe.
What about reusing and redeveloping existing coal-fired power plants into batteries or thermal storage centers?
Thermal energy storage is a different technology, where you exploit the pre-existing infrastructure that otherwise is going to be, demolished or left unused, etc. You can use this very rich infrastructure that does not only involve the turbines, it involves also the grid connecting the lignite plant with everything, but use it for storage purposes. So that, I would say, is a very good example of what can be used in coal regions. And it's common, I would say, in lignite mining regions across the EU. To convert lignite plants to thermal energy storage facilities is really an option. And last but not least, you keep jobs in the lignite industry, which is a main prerequisite of any process, any just transition process in any country in the world, in reality, because you keep all the jobs you have in the lignite plant, plus other jobs for the storage sector. Of course, you miss the lignite mining jobs, we're not claiming otherwise, but still to keep a significant amount of jobs in the lignite industry is very, very good.
Nikos, you're like another oracle from Delphi. Hey, thanks for sharing all of this with our audience today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Since Nikos and I spoke, coal to solar and renewable developments around the world have continued to take off. Before we end the show, I'm going to detail just a few more. As I said at the top of the pod, I've been covering coal mining and energy for decades, starting from when I was a grad student working for a coal research center in the U.S. state of Illinois around 2000 or so. At the time, Illinois, which has the most coal reserves of any U.S. state, was experiencing a mining and burning resurgence. Now, some 20 years later, across Illinois, at least 9 major coal-fired power plants are on track to become solar farms and battery storage facilities over the next 3 years. Also, while I was a grad student in 2002, I had the chance to study in the coal mining regions of Eastern Czech Republic and Ostrava. And while I was there, I visited several of its super deep coal mines. Since then, many of these plants or mines have closed, leaving behind the question of what to do with their infrastructure. Recently, a deal was struck between the Diamo, the Czech state-owned company tasked with mitigating the consequences of the country's mines, and a UK-based underground energy storage company, Gravitricity, to convert the closed Darkov coal complex into a storage and hydrogen and solar hub. Renamed Eden Silesia, Gravitricity hopes to transform the Darkov mine into the first full-scale gravity energy storage site in Europe, while also constructing a PV power plant there with an eye towards eventual green hydrogen generation. Gravitricity estimates that worldwide there are around 14,000 mines which could be similarly suitable for gravity energy storage. At the same time, on virtually the other side of the globe, the nation of Bangladesh just announced it's seeking partners to build out a series of solar power plants on ponds created from decades of extraction, including to start at a mine in the Dinjapur district. According to the Bangladesh Power Development Board officials, this project alone has the capacity to host a floating solar power plant with up to 50 megawatts of capacity. Staying in Bangladesh, the Singapore-based energy developer Sembcorp has announced plans to deploy more than 400 megawatts of solar PV at another coal facility near Cox's Bazar. Do note, nationwide all across Bangladesh, the country only has less than 960 megawatts of renewable capacity, meaning these two projects alone will nearly double it. As greenhouse gas emissions otherwise keep rising, all of this is welcome progress. You have been listening to the Energy Transition Podcast, a product of the Heinrich Böll Stiftung's Energy Transition Platform. We'd like to thank the Energy Transition team in the EU office in Brussels, including editor Lisa Santner, digital coordinator Joan Lanfranco, as well as program head Martin Keim for his guidance. And of course, we can't end this podcast without a huge shout out once again to our amazing producer, the sound guru, Carnival King of Dusseldorf, and bellowing bassist, Christian Kreienborg. From the former German capital city of Bonn, I wish you all smooth sailing on what could be rough seas ahead. Until next time.